Hey, everybody. Welcome to a new data-centric podcast. I'm Steve McDowell from More Insights and Strategy. Matt Kimball, our co-host, remains off on special assignment and should be back, I think, on our next podcast. So this week is Flash Memory Summit, which is where it's really the premier event for getting into the nitty-gritty of you know, where enterprise storage is going and storage technologies. To get us in the mood for that, I thought it would be great to bring in one of the gurus of the storage industry, Andy Walls. Andy is an IBM fellow and the CTO for IBM's flash storage business. And we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening in enterprise storage and flash storage and how that's evolving.
So I'm just going to jump in, right? So Andy, you are you're an IBM fellow, you're CTO for IBM Flash Storage. That's a pretty heady title. What is it you actually do?
Basically, whatever is needed, Steve. I have been in storage now for almost my entire career of 39 years.
And most of that's been at IBM, is that right?
All of it's been at IBM. All of it's been at IBM. And at least the last 34 years have been in storage, although I dabbled even in storage when I first joined the company. So my responsibility really is to stay on top of where the industry is headed. And in particular, I have been the flash evangelist inside IBM, as well as the CTO for all of our block storage appliances and our directions. So I have done the flash core modules with QLC. I am responsible for making sure our flash systems are designed with the right requirements and meet our clients' needs.
Excellent. Well, some of those emerging technologies I want to talk about. And one of the ones, and you know, there's a lot of conversation around QLC and where it fits. And some of the storage vendors are taking a little bit different approach. I'm going to talk about that in a second. But first, you know, for those listening who, you know, don't think about NAND on a daily basis, right? They buy an all-flash array and, you know, flash. What makes QLC different from the TLC that we're used to dealing with in enterprise storage?
Yeah, that's a good
question. I mean, apart from the number of cells, right?
TLC literally means 3 bits per cell. QLC means 4 bits per cell. It's a little more explanatory when you think of the fact that the 3 bits per cell means that I have 8 voltage levels I have to be able to differentiate. In QLC, I have 16 voltage levels I have to be able to differentiate. And since the floating gate and the charge trap tend to lose charge over time, having twice as many voltage levels can be challenging and mean that your endurance might be less and that it might take more time to program, all right? Okay. So the basic technology gives you 33% more bits you can store, all right? Because QLC, 4/3, right? So 33% more. But there are some challenges one has to overcome in order to use it.
So I'm getting more density, but I'm sacrificing endurance. Is this read endurance, write endurance, all?
In NAND flash, thankfully, it is write endurance, all right? Mm-hmm. But something called read retention, meaning that over time, the more reads I do, because I'm having to inject an electric field when I do the read, and that electric field can affect the neighbors as well. So they might be affected some. So over time, my read retention, meaning how many times I read it, I may need to take and rewrite that block.
Got it.
And the interesting thing is that it can be challenging, but what we've been able to do is kind of work around that and find ways to mitigate and give us the same performance and the same endurance that we had with TLC, Steve, which nobody else has been able to do.
And that's what I want to talk about a little bit, because we're looking at, you know, we look at watching the storage industry and looking at where everyone is deploying QLC. And last week, as we're recording this, was NetApp's Big Insight Conference, and they announced their first kind of tier two storage array, their FAS line, that is an all flash, all QLC array, pure storage. You know, they put out their flash array C, which was all flash QLC. And the folks that are taking this path are targeting this toward kind of tier two, more read intensive workloads, where I'm getting a lot of bang for my buck from a capacity from a capacity and density perspective. IBM's taking a little bit different approach. IBM hasn't been, so I'm gonna put you on the spot a little bit, right? Said publicly that you're using QLC in your flash modules. But man, we had to pull teeth to get anybody to say that, because I think, you know, a lot of people, QLC is still a little bit of a bad word, right? When you talk about endurance issues. But you guys and some others, you're not alone here, are using QLC and making that more as part of a balanced media, if you will, right? A balanced media module. How are you thinking about it? What have you solved, and how's IBM and Andy in particular thinking about QLC?
Yeah. So, I mean, IBM always, in order to really survive, IBM has to differentiate. Mm-hmm. We can't just do it like everyone else. We need a differentiation to really drive client value. And, you know, we do not do SSDs and sell them and OEM them. We only do them for our own market. So, again, there has to be a reason for us to do that. And there are several. One of which is compression and other accelerators. Essentially, they're computational storage. Mm-hmm. But for us really to have an advantage, we need the cost structure to be as good as possible so that we can provide this functionality and yet compete with others who are using standard SSDs that they can buy at commodity prices. So I looked at this some time ago and I said, all right, well, what's interesting is that TLC became mainstream. QLC is going to be harder. Therefore, if we invest in doing the research and the design effort to allow QLC to be able to be ubiquitous in our products, then we're going to have a real advantage. And so, Steve, we started doing some characterization and experimentation, taking real NAND flash from Micron, putting it on characterization, testing some algorithms. We came up with some real innovative technology that allows us to get endurance that is similar to TLC, and to mitigate the performance disadvantages. So we really redid the controller. So what we did is we invested in making sure we could use the QLC. If you don't do that investment, then no, you shouldn't try to make it for primary storage. You should relegate it to the lesser tier.
And that secret sauce that you're doing to mitigate around some of the limitations in QLC, that's within the flash module itself. You have a
it is.
I'm not going to ask you what it is, but you have an ASIC or a microprocessor or whatever.
I can tell you some of it. Not every company, Steve, has the advantages of having a research arm like IBM. We have the finest research folks in the world. We have a team in Zurich, Switzerland. They've actually have won Nobel Prizes. That's just how good they are. And I have the ability to tap into them. And so one of the things we did was to use the technology we developed for TLC. And part of that is what we call health binning and heat segregation. So health binning and heat segregation says, I'm going to categorize the data that is written. And the data that is written the most, I'm going to put that on flash blocks, which are the healthiest. Now, there's the key. Our research guys have developed algorithms where we can early on tell how healthy a flash block is going to be. By knowing that early, I now can put data that has changed the most on the healthiest blocks, data that has changed the least on less healthy blocks. we get about a 2x improvement in endurance doing that. All right. Okay. To do it, you really have to understand the flash and know how to project it. And then to overcome the performance, mm-hmm. we developed something called smart data placement. So we are early on in the life of the flash, we will define it as QLC. I'm sorry, as SLC. All right.
Got it.
Now, the beauty of that is that as it's SLC, we can hold about 20% of the capacity of the device as SLC only. But Steve, let's say that you're using compression that we have built in and you get 3-to-1 compression ratio. Oh my goodness, that's like 60% of the capacity now. So you can hold a lot of data and it's just an SLC. You end up getting better performance. As you convert to QLC, we use smart data placement. We'll put the data that is read the most in the fastest pages. So all these things combined, Steve, help us to overcome the negative effects of QLC.
Okay. And I guess it's worth pointing out, right? We talked to Eric Herzog a couple of weeks ago here on the podcast ahead of the announcements at IBM TechU. But you give the exact same, or IBM gives the exact same warranty and longevity guarantees on the parts that include QLC as they do anything else. So in your mind, you solve these problems and they're all equal. And
yeah,
I don't want to put words
absolutely.
In your mouth. Okay.
Here's the evidence. With TLC, we put them on test and got 16,000 right arrays. I'm sorry, we got 18,000 right array cycles. With QLC, we got 16,000 right array cycles. Nobody else is able to do that. Okay. At 16,000, that's 2 drive writes per day. Steve, they'll never wear out.
Excellent. So as an IT guy or an IT buyer, what I'm really looking at here is you're delivering me a system that gives me some level of performance and capacity and density that's leveraging whatever technology is making sense at the time.
Right. Yeah? Right. From your perspective, it happens to be QLC. You don't have to know anything about it. We're able to give excellent price and the same performance that you got before. So to you, it's a win-win.
And part of the confusion, I think, for IT guys is we're looking at QLC and what I'm going to ask you about next, which is, you know, server class memory or Optane or 3D Crosspoint, whatever you want to call it, is you're making me think about the underlying technology. And an IT guy wants to think about data placement and high availability and all of those things. I don't care about NAND, right? But the industry is forcing me to a little bit right now. And you talked about QLC. We're having the same conversation at the opposite end of that spectrum with, you know, server class memory, right? However you want to define that. I mean, you know, kind of a broad definition I'll throw out, you know, is, you know, when I'm talking about server class memory, I'm talking about things like 3D Crosspoint, which was developed by Intel and Micron. Intel sells it as Optane. Micron, I don't know that there are pieces on the market yet. But what makes it different, apart from the underlying technology, is it's byte addressable, right? So it's, we're seeing it leveraged in a couple of ways, right? We're seeing vendors take advantage of the byte addressability and putting this in a DIMM slot, and they're using it for write caching or buffering or whatever we want to do with it. And then we're also seeing, and you know, IBM certainly supports this on the Flash the 9200s, is SSD as primary storage. I'm sorry, Optane as primary storage. Where in your mind, right? So where does this fit on the spectrum? It seems like overkill to me, right? To put it as an SSD replacement. Where does it fit? Yeah. Where does you know, that whole set of technologies fit, and how are you leveraging it?
Great question. I like your point on the QLC, and that was part of why I decided we needed to go all QLC, because some said, well, why don't you just have a TLC and a QLC? Heavens, I can't develop 2 different controllers. That's right. Expensive. And then it's the same point. Why should we make our customers choose, right? How do they know? So the same is true on SCM. So, you know, there's 2 ways that SCMs are being deployed. One is as DRAM replacements, like you talked about, Steve. Mm-hmm. The other is as SSDs, and we sell them as SSDs today. We support both both Samsung and we support Optane. There's some advantages. I mean, you can get 10 to 20 microseconds where it's a good solid 150 to 200 microseconds for the NAND flash. But of course, in an external storage unit, you already have the overhead from the storage stack itself, right? So there's already fiber channel and other overheads. So the improvement isn't as great. Where it does benefit you is for functionality that has quite a bit of metadata. And if that metadata now has a higher probability of being in a faster access device, now your overall IOPS and latency can be better, like data reduction stacks. If you need dedup, there's a lot of metadata for storing the hashes of that. If that can be stored on SSDs that have it, great. We've showed some benefit, about a 30% reduction in latency if you have a few SCMs to store the metadata. Now, I think the real winner, though, is when it goes onto the DRAM bus as Optane DIMMs, or in the future, if you're familiar with CXL, the new Express Link that is happening. And that's coherent with the memory bus. And now you put Optane DIMMs there, and I'm using Optane now more as a proxy for whatever might make sense, right? Mm-hmm. And it truly stays cheaper than DRAM. You now have many advantages. In the storage world, we can now store more metadata and help your overall performance. In the HCI space, hyperconverged, and in the server space, you now can have a larger data set for doing AI. You now can your in-memory databases can grow. Now, they might need some intelligence to be able to tell the difference. But boy, I see a great advantage there, Steve.
We've seen a lot of proof points there with even Microsoft SQL Server, large in-memory instances where they're using SCM and a DIMM slot for checkpointing. And the recovery times after a failure are, orders of magnitude different from coming off disk.
Yeah. There you go. And that's a simple way to do it, right? If there was a little tiering maybe in the analytics that would allow you to have the two clients, maybe now you could even do more. Your data set could be larger for doing fraud detection and other things.
Okay. Yeah. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about interconnects. The other thing we're hearing a lot about is NVMe over Fabric. And this is, it's had some fits and starts, but now we're starting to see traction in a couple of areas. And I talked to the guys at Brocade Broadcom a couple of weeks ago. Actually, it's coming out on podcast this week, where they're talking about NVMe over Fiber Channel. But IBM was there early with NVMe over InfiniBand. There's a lot of folks talking about NVMe over TCP using Rocky, accelerated NICs. How are you thinking about NVMe over Fabric?
Well, we have shipped NVMe over Fiber Channel in our Flash Systems products now for 2 years. Mm-hmm. All right. And so we offer the choice, and many customers, even I would say, Steve, that the adoption is still kind of low because these things take a while to catch on. And Fiber Channel has done a lot to improve itself over time and to make sure the latency stays low and everything. Nevertheless, we do have it, and there's been some adoption and a lot of testing for POCs, and I would see that as growing. Where I'm starting to see some interesting requirements is in what you mentioned, the Rocky, the NVMe over Rocky and Ethernet. So there are companies that have never used Fiber Channel that we are in with CSPs, MSPs, and service providers. And they're saying, okay, we want to, we're ready. We want to go to NVMe. And in many cases, it's NVMe over Rocky.
And I think we're seeing the same thing as we, analysts go and talk to the end customers. You know, for greenfield developments, NVMe over Ethernet with Rocky or whatever makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, there is a tremendous amount of investment in FC infrastructure. You know, we know how to manage it. We know how to run it. We don't want to rip and replace because it's expensive, right? Some of this stuff hasn't even depreciated yet. So, you know, it's a nice, you know, replace in place strategy when you.
But I tell you, I am starting to see some large existing customers with fiber channel estates, and I think it's probably they're building new data centers, all right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they're expanding data centers, and they're starting to look at 100 gigabit Ethernet or 25 gigabit Ethernet and NVMe over IP or ICER, so that, you know, they don't have to invest for those new data centers to have fiber channels. So it is appealing to new data centers. I have to agree with you. Rip and replace. I don't hear a lot about that. But.
Yeah. So this is an enabling technology, and one of the things we're hearing about. Well, let me say it a different way. So I look at NVMe over Fabric. You know, yes, it's a lower latency interconnect than we're used to dealing with for storage, but it's also fast enough, I think, where we're starting to see it enable new models. And if you look at, you know, one thing I like to do is watch where the investment money's flowing. You know, not necessarily IBM or NetApp or whomever. It's you know, where the startups playing, and we're starting to see these technologies become the cornerstone of, you know, disaggregated storage solutions, right? Where now it's truly a software-defined storage array, and I'm using NVMe over whatever to go and access those bits. How are you thinking about disaggregated storage, or are you? I mean, is the day of the dedicated storage array, block storage array, numbered?
Well, it's a great question. So, in a way, you can say that. Storage is disaggregated storage, and that you can connect to it with NVMe over IP. Well, not yet, Steve. We will have that in the relatively near future. But I mean, we are going to have that. You can have NVMe over FC today, and it is disaggregated. And the beauty of disaggregated external storage is really the same advantage that you get with disaggregated hyperconverged storage. Is that you have a central place to manage it. You have a central place to add or support or to expand it. And the problem with true hyperconverged is, number one, you get trapped storage. You have some servers that have too much, some that don't have enough. You get inconsistent performance as you go over the network. 100 gig will help that some, but we know that networks aren't perfect and congestion affects you. So I think that although disaggregated hyperconverged is a nice growth play, I think many customers will continue to see the benefits of having external storage that they can connect many servers up and have a centralized place for expanding, supporting, and managing.
I think so too. And where we see, you know, again, as we talk to IT guys, you know, we saw this with HCI 5 years ago. It's not something I'm comfortable with yet, right? It's a whole kind of different way of thinking about it. And it's almost a generational shift as some of these things roll out. But I love watching these experiments happen, right? And see what the reactions are.
And you know, what usually happens, Steve, is that instead of replacing, it augments, right? It creates... Right. Multiple tiers. We often think, if you remember when InfiniBand came in, what, 15 years ago? Oh, InfiniBand was going to go everywhere. It was going to replace everything. It didn't. It found its niche and high-performance computing, right?
Right. So let's go that direction a little bit. So IBM builds flash storage for traditional servers, and you build flash storage for mainframes. And I'm coming from a position of ignorance on this question. How is it different? Thinking about, you know, external storage for an x86 server versus the very different architecture of a mainframe? Or is it largely the same in just a faster box?
Well, no, I would say that the architectures are quite different. In the ZOS and Count Key Data and FICON, obviously are different protocols, all right? So supporting FICON, there's only a few suppliers in the world that do that. As you know, Dell, EMC, HDS, and IBM. And so the protocol is different, But you're really asking about the architecture. One of the things that the system Z is able to achieve are very high cache hit ratios with the with their storage. And therefore, like our DS8000 storage has done a lot to optimize around cache hits, to have lots of DRAM. In distributed storage, yeah, I see 50, 60% cache hit ratios, but not 95 to 98 like you would get in a Z. And therefore, in distributed, you're going to go and optimize that read miss tremendously so that you can benefit, because you're also consolidating. In a distributed storage, you might have hundreds, if not thousands, of servers doing tens of applications. And so you've got to be able to service them consistently with a lot of misses.
What's behind the high cache rate on the mainframe?
The mainframe has really been architected, I think, with their ZOS to be able to be very intelligent and to get that really high cache hit ratio.
Got it. All right. Hey, so one of the things I love about your job description, your title, is you get to look at things in the future. So, yeah. You know, we talked a little bit about, we've talked about technologies that were emerging 3 years ago. All right. What are you looking at? What are you paying attention to that's got you excited as we look, you know, 3-5 year horizon?
I'd say two things in particular. One is the CXL bus, and the it's a lot like the open CAPI for power. All right. And so it's interesting that idea is now making its way into the Intel and AMD world. The beauty of what CXL does is it opens up this whole area of new architectures that because you can have the CXL bus and it can have some distance, you can almost have composable systems, right? You can easily tear down and create new servers or microservers very quickly using the CXL and stuff. So I'm very interested to see what we do with that in the future of IT. The second is an idea that I am proud to say that I and IBM really, I think, started, and that is computational storage. That today we think of storage and we think of servers. Even in HCI, I still have storage, it's part of that box, and servers. The problem is, although our cores have improved, our memory bus speeds really have not. So if you're gonna try to run all your data through the processor, you're gonna be limited. What is better is to take advantage of accelerators and stuff we can put on those SSDs, on those flash core modules, like compression, like simple searches and sorts and other kinds of AI functionality to only bring in the data you need so that you can really become more efficient. Now it's going to open up a lot more AI and analytics, I think, Stephen, really take us to the next level. So computational storage and composable systems, I think, are the two big things coming forward.
Like that. And yeah, there's a lot of activity right now, it seems like, around computational storage. I know SNEA kicked off a working group around that about a year ago, year and a half ago.
Yep.
And there's a couple of startups that are really, I think, laser focused on some like fintech and some niche applications. But when you look at edge, when you look at, you know, I'm ingesting lots of time series data, maybe that needs to be scrubbed. These are great applications for computational storage. Is IBM?
It is.
Do you have anything productized today in that space or no?
We do. I mean, our flash core modules today, that run in our flash system 9200 have accelerators built in. All right. So we have a compressor in line. It's not like other smart SSDs where it's kind of out of band and you have to run it through. It's in line. Every piece of data that comes in gets compressed, and then we deal with that And it saves space. Now, that's a simple accelerator. Well, it's actually not simple, but it's simple to understand.
Right.
What that does is it offloads the processors from having to do all of the management around a log structured array, and that's very expensive. So now you can use those processors for doing other things like replication and hyperswap and things. The next thing that we put in that is just now coming available is a simple hinting architecture, all right? Just think of a hinting architecture as the operating system in the Flash System 9200 knows a lot more about this data than the storage system. So let's say it's metadata and it says, hey, this is metadata. Then we can put that on SLC. We can put it in the fastest page. And when they come to get it, they'll get better performance. You can imagine that being expanded to, hey, this is just a scrub read. All right. I'm just doing a scrub read in the background. Oh, great. I'm going to put that as lowest priority. I'm not going to let that interfere. There's all kinds of things around that for storage that we now have in. It's shipping now. And we have really gained a lot of experience in how to do this.
And it makes sense when you say it. When I came into, I angled into computational storage from, a standalone SSD that's got some embedded intelligence, you're really talking about it's a fundamental architectural shift of how I'm developing storage modules. And maybe Correct. Those end up in a flash system where you're doing the things you talked about, or maybe it's an edge device where it can
Yeah. I think the hyperscalers will be very interested, not necessarily the compression angle, Steve,
right.
but for them, you can imagine instead of all the searches being done in the server, you can imagine them wanting to do some simple, give me the data that has this characteristic. And that can be done with simple accelerators.
All right. I'm going to ask you a really stupid question out of a place of ignorance. And if it comes out bad, I'll just edit this out.
No problem.
One of the things IBM talks a lot about is you have a very aggressive program around quantum computing. Uh-huh. Does that change how we think about persistent data and how data is stored or no? Is it just a bit stream and it's the same storage that I'm already using?
Yeah. You think the thing about quantum computing is that we, I think, are still just on the bare edge of knowing what it's going to be about. All right. Today, I wouldn't tell you that it has a lot of interesting storage characteristics. Today, it doesn't. Because the output is generally not that big, right? I think what's going to happen, Steve, is when you start doing hybrid cases, right, where you have some quantum and some other computing intermixed, then I think that we're going to have some interesting storage topologies and it could change it. I think it's a little too early to know.
Too early? Okay. Fair enough. Hey, one thing I want to leave with. So Flash Memory Summit is next week and you're giving one of the keynotes. What are you going to talk about?
Well, actually, Alistair Simon, who is the VP of development, is going to give the keynote.
Okay.
It is going to be all about QLC. And actually, Steve, it's a lot of what we had talked about at the beginning of this podcast. It's going to be why QLC is still interesting, why it's not a boring topic. And what it enables, and also how does storage class memories and persistent memory fit into this, all right?
Yeah.
And Alistair is a delightful speaker. He has a British accent, so all Americans love him. and it's going to be really exciting.
Sounds smart by default. Yeah. It's one of my favorite conferences. I like going to Flash Memory Summit and the SNEA Storage Developers Conference because these two, you really get a sense of what people are thinking about, right? I think we all understand what's being deployed in the near-term roadmap, but there's a lot of science experiments out there that, some
get
traction and some won't, but going through the, going through all the PDFs of the presentations after, it's one of my favorite yearly things.
I agree.
Hey, so Andy, thanks again for taking the time this week. Is there anything I didn't ask you that you wished I had?
No, I am impressed by the breadth of the questions. I think we touched on just about everything that's exciting and interesting. Thank you for being willing to talk to me.
Oh, please. As an analyst, I took pages of notes here while you were talking, and this is going to make me sound smarter when I'm off doing.
All right. Great. All right. I'm glad it was helpful.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
You're welcome. Take care.